So it's incredible the fact that you own a dividend software company. And we really never talk about dividend stocks. I mean, we've done
a couple.
We've done episodes on like our five favorite, but like
turn me up a little bit.
Yeah. In the ways that we have conversations and the things that we talk about, it's very rarely dividend stocks.
Yeah.
And I think that's, we probably should, considering how much of our portfolios and how much of our net worth is dedicated to it. And the fact that you have a software company based around dividends.
I mean, one of my biggest goals is to grow my dividend income to supplement like my basic needs every month. Like if I need like $2,000 to live off, or not to live off of, but like, let's say $1,500 covers my monthly bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's my goal for my dividend portfolio right now, at least.
Even more than like, say, real estate.
I'd say it's like 50-50. Cause right. I think like I can go get a lot more bang for my buck on real estate, but I'm also leveraging my money. So like, I like both aspects of it. Cause I also can find, I can find deals in some certain dividend stocks.
So I guess it makes sense to just state, like, I feel like we've gone down the rabbit hole too many times of trying to debate whether dividends versus growth, dividends versus real estate. And as we're getting older, we're realizing, shit, let's just have a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Or like do what works for you. Like if I was talking to a buddy of mine, he's my realtor for back home that I use, like personally, like where I live, not in Kansas City, where I live. And he was talking to me about like stock market and stuff. He's like, dude, I just don't know anything about it. He's like, he knows real estate. He's good at it. And I told him, I was like, dude, you don't need to. I said, honestly, what I'm going to tell you, all you need to do is throw it in VTI and you're done. Never look at it again. But right. I said, you don't really need to have like all these different ones. It's, in my opinion, if you know you're good at something, then do that. Now, if it's crypto, go listen to our previous episode.
Yikes.
But like, if it's a proven investment vehicle that's solid and you can diversify in it well, meaning like you can diversify across many different properties, you can diversify in ETFs or many different dividend stocks, whatever it may be, you just got to find what works for you. And what works for me is, because I love cash flow, real estate income, and dividend stocks.
All right, so let me ask you this. Are you separating portfolios? Like, do you have, here's my VTI portfolio, here's my growth portfolio, here's my dividend portfolio?
I do that. Yeah. I think that's more for a creator standpoint, though. Like,
so you can make videos about
it? Yeah, well, it's easy to separate. Because, like, it would be too confusing if it was all together.
Right.
I think that's more of just an organizational thing for me.
It's easier to be like, here's the update on my, quote, dividend portfolio.
Yeah.
I agree. And I'll also say, too, I like having them separate because I feel like different brokerages have pros and cons according to how you invest.
Absolutely.
Like, I probably would never have a dividend portfolio in Robinhood.
Probably wouldn't either.
But I don't think I'm going to trade options in anything ever again that isn't Robinhood.
Yeah, agree.
You know, so I think that's...
Well, I take that back. I would have a dividend portfolio in Robinhood. I think I would. It's just, it would take a little bit more effort and work to be able to do that. But I also would say this too, is I think, like I said, just it makes my things, it just makes everything look better. And I like whenever things are organized and in their own buckets, but if I threw it all together, I just feel like I wouldn't manage it. Actually, let me say this real quick. I want your thoughts on this. I haven't said this to anybody yet, but my goal right now in my dividend portfolio is to grow it to 100,000, right? Portfolio size. What I may do, depending on what my share amounts look like for certain stocks, and that when I hit that $100,000 mark, and I want your opinion on this, I may move brokerages. So I may move that account out of M1 to like Fidelity or something. Do you know why?
So you can wheel it.
Certain stocks, yeah.
So that, I mean, every single dividend video I make, I start the video with the best buy and hold, don't think about it.
Set it and forget it.
Is M1 Finance.
Yeah.
And I believe that wholeheartedly.
I think so too.
And
will you explain why though? Like,
yes. So really the simplicity of it is just awesome. The fact that you can set up automatic deposits, the fact that it will ration out and portion out the percentages of certain, you could set, I never want this to exceed X amount of my portfolio. I love that. Its user interface is very, very easy. Like the,
they could do a little bit more information on stocks and stuff, but yeah.
It only allows one trading window a day, which is what I hated about it at first, but I still, now I like that about it.
I do, but there has been a time where like I wanted to sell a stock because it like shot up that day and it was Dick's Sporting Goods. And they're like, oh, you got to wait till the morning time to do that. I was like, come on. And then the next day it's shot back down.
Or I sometimes like I'll get a dividend or whatever and I like to drip mine in, but it doesn't drip right into stocks. It drips like into the portfolio.
Yeah.
So like there'll be some times where it'll be like 11 or even 10 in the morning and I'll realize, oh man, I got a $40 dividend. And I want to put that right back in because we're red on the day. And I'm like,
can't do it. Shit,
I can't. Yeah.
So, now M1 Plus, you could do it in the afternoon, but I'm not paying $100 for it.
No, I mean, I don't use their paid service either. One second. I just have to text my wife. Then.
Yeah, I mean, so that's where I'm at, though. I think once I get to a certain amount, I may. I don't know, dude. I'm not sure what I want to do yet, but I may transfer it to Fidelity or who knows. Maybe I transfer it to Robinhood because I can wheel it. I probably wouldn't do that. I'd probably go to a Fidelity.
Well, I guess you were asking, like, would I wheel? Because I have my portfolio. Actually, M1, they just sent me a cool email that I put on Twitter. It was like, you just reached $50,000. So half of 100,000.
That's cool.
And I've had 50 in there before, or I got to like 48 and then I took money out because I needed it. And I kind of treat my dividend portfolio as kind of like that. It's my, like, not my emergency fund. I don't want to use that. But like, account. I use it as, I know that I could lose a large percentage, but it's kind of like where I store cash, if you will. So I needed 10 grand a couple months ago, so I took it out. But I just hit 50, and I'm getting to the point now where some of mine, I have 75 shares or so. Mm-hmm. And as somebody that wheels a lot, somebody has a book on wheeling, I do think about that a lot.
Because, and you can't trade options with M1.
Right. You cannot. And
did I tell you they called me?
M1?
Yeah.
About what?
Just like as a user.
And said?
They're like, hey, how's it going?
I don't know.
What do you think about the platform?
They've never reached out to me.
And I said, well, you're asking me.
Yeah, and I'm sure they were like, that's not what we're here for.
Yeah. I know.
But I don't know like what I'll do because back to that like keeping it separate. Like I have, even though I stand behind the wheel, it's still trading options in my eyes.
Yeah.
So it still needs to go into my speculative investment percentage of my net worth.
Makes sense.
And
well, and we also have like our wheel stocks we pick, which I feel like could go into the Robin. My like, okay, for example, for those that are listening that don't know, my dividend portfolio I have with M1 Finance, my Robinhood portfolio I have is my growth options portfolio. And then I have my Fidelity portfolio that is just slowly turning everything into VTI.
Right.
So
I'm the same way.
It's
just, I'm a Vanguard guy.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like, okay, well, if I want to trade options on Intel and start wheeling Intel,
right,
I don't want to open up a position in my M1 portfolio because one, it's going to take forever to build up to 100 shares because it's going to, all that money's getting spread throughout the entire portfolio. Mm-hmm. But then two, I could throw it in Robinhood, but that, you know, now it's a dividend stock and, you know, do I want that in there? And I'm like, well, you know, I know.
Which just, this is this stupid bullshit that we have to think about as creators.
Bullshit,
because,
because. Well, I know. I think even regular and sometimes like even just a dude who's not a creator may. I mean, when you get into this zone, dude, it's just like, one, it's a hobby.
Right.
Like it's a fun hobby and it's how you want to structure and organize your stuff. Because like I get comments about stuff like that.
But you know, if you threw some dividend, if you had your quote, growth portfolio on Robinhood, and then they saw an Intel in there, they'd be like, that's not a growth stock.
That's true. Yeah.
But
then I would just say it's my wheel stock. That's what it would be.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I have my separate wheel portfolio, which has the amount of money that I'm willing to trade the wheel with. And I get the question all the time, like, Brad, if you're so successful in the wheel, then why not wheel more? Right. And that's kind of like getting pretty successful at day trading, but that doesn't mean I want to scale up.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like it for more reasons than the money. And that like sounds crazy. And I feel like the fact that I wheel with $20,000, which is something that I built up over 5 years, the fact that I like got to 20,000, if it gets to 25, I take money out. Like I'm one of those that's like pay yourself in these speculative things. Like when I day trade at the end of the month, if I'm profitable, I reset my account because it's not something I want to do because
you're not looking to day trade with 200 grand.
No, dude, no, yeah. No. You know,
oh my God,
mostly because I day trade because it's fun for me.
Yeah, it's a hobby.
And it's like what I do during the day for 2 hours. Yeah. You know, it's a 2 hour hobby. And that's even the money I was willing to lose earlier in the year when I was first starting it out. It was like a Vegas trip for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like, all right, if I lose $5,000 over the course of this year, that was $5,000 in entertainment for me. And it was mm-hmm. worth it.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at with like the dividend portfolio and like getting to 100 shares. Because at first I was like, all right, if I get to 100 shares in, say, Intel, I could just sell that position out of M1 Finance and then I could bring it over to Robinhood, put the same money in, buy the 100 shares, this and the other thing. But then now I'm getting to the point where it's like, okay, well, then why did I grow the dividend portfolio? Did I grow it to get to 100 shares so I could wheel it?
Mm.
Or did I grow it because I want to drip it into something that one day
mm-hmm.
gives me passive income? I can still wheel on the side with X amount of dollars of speculative net worth.
It's probably the better way to do it.
That's just where I'm at now. Now, I mean, could that change in a year? Yeah. But I'm also too, and this is something that, I mean, this isn't a wheel episode, but when you wheel something, you almost don't want to do it with things that you have large unrealized capital gains on.
True.
Because in the wheel,
you are
going to get assigned eventually. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to. And if you had something that has huge capital gains or something that like you've just held for a really, really long time.
And you don't want to sell it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
Which would be a lot of the positions in my dividend portfolio if I built up to 100 shares.
Because the premium that you're going to receive
may
not be worth getting assigned. And I don't know. These are things I think about. But how many stocks are in your dividend, quote, dividend portfolio?
20. That's ETFs and stocks make up 20 total positions.
Okay. So of those 20, I have 24.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 20, do you mind talking about them or no?
Wide open with them.
Of those 20, how many do you think you and I have duplicates of? Because I have more than you. So of your 20, do you think we have 5, 10, 15, or do you think I have every one of yours?
Because
I really have no idea.
I would say probably, man, you have how many? 24?
24. I have 23 stocks and one ETF.
I would say probably like 8.
So over under, is it 8?
I think so.
I'm going to say the over. I say we at least duplicate 50%.
Okay.
All right. So do you want to have less? Mind. All right. So hold on. Let me get.
Yeah. Say you're like, so right now my portfolio is sitting at $14,728.42.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again, please?
$14,728.42.
Do you know what that returns you for the year for people that are just curious?
Right now, my returns, including dividends, are, well, you're talking about capital gains?
No, like how much does that pay you in dividends per year?
Oh,
roughly.
Oh, yeah. Almost $500.
It's okay.
It's just under 3.5% yield, total portfolio.
Yeah, I think I'm at like 3.8 yield on cost is like 3.2.
Okay.
And I have a $50,000 portfolio. And I think, yeah, I get like, I want to say $1,500 or $1,600 a year
Sounds about right.
All right, so dividend stocks, yeah, I have.
You can track that with the dividendtracker.com.
I do. You can use my link in the description if you want to try it out. All right, yeah, so I have 23 and one ETF. And to be honest, I'm curious because I haven't really looked. I like the biggest move I just did, I'll tell you, last month, I added the ETF and I got rid of a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I got rid of 3M. I did a video about.
And Pepsi, right?
No, I still and Pepsi. Yeah. Yes, I did get rid of Pepsi. Because we'll explain in the ETF, because I guess you know what ETF I have. But I got rid of 3M because I think that they are in a world of hurt. I think you mess with the military and just, it wasn't a fight I wanted to fight with them.
Yeah.
You know, so I got rid of them and I added this ETF.
Was it a big loss that you took or no?
No, because the portfolio, each one of these positions now. So when I say I have 50,000, I have 41 in this, and then I have a bunch in VTI. Cause we've discussed on the podcast before how I put $500 aside every single month for next year's Roth IRA. Mm. So that's what got me to 50. So my dividend portfolio actually without VTI is $41,524.
Okay.
So each one of these positions has about $1,800 in it.
Got it.
So I was down on 3M, probably 15-20%. This is just one of those years where I'm like, I'm just going to take capital loss.
Yeah.
You know, like it's going to be a good tax year.
Yeah.
So do you want to, you want to start with the ETF? Because that's going to be one of them. Because you know,
I have, how many ETFs do you have in your portfolio?
Just one.
I have three.
Okay. What are the three?
SCHD, which is the one you have, right?
I have SCHD, yes.
VTI, and then JEPI.
Okay. So I have VTI, like I said, I have VTI, but I consider that more my Roth. So we have like two of the three there. What
do you want to do percentages? Are your all,
my
holdings all equal?
Okay. So that's definitely something we can talk about too.
Okay.
So of your, I'll tell you mine. Mine, I have a target of 8% of my overall portfolio for SCHD.
Mine's 30.
30 for just SCHD.
Yep.
So what are the other two, what about the other two ETFs?
VTI is 12, JEPI's 10.
So of your total dividend portfolio, that was quick math and I've been drinking, but the 50% roughly is ETFs.
30,
40, 52%. 52%. And you said that, one thing we have discussed, you think you're going to be leaning more towards the ETF route, right?
Yeah, I'm probably going to raise my target allocations a little bit across the board.
Okay.
Between SCHD, VTI, and JEPI. I'll still be owning stocks. It'll just be a total overall ownership will go down a little bit across my single stocks.
Do you want to talk about JEPI quick? Because you know that I hate covered call ETFs. Yeah. Do you want to just give your quick opinion? We don't need to talk about what people can Google what JEPI is, but the pros for JEPI for you and why I stay away from them.
Yep. So it's, yeah, basically a covered call ETF. They use, I think it's around half their,
they do use half
assets under management to write covered calls. And then you earn a premium from that. That's basically how you get your dividend from the premiums they're gaining from those covered calls they write.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have some ownership in stocks that help with capital gains.
Right.
And they've held up pretty well. I feel like for the, how the market has been, you know, act in the past year.
Right.
Yeah, I don't really know.
For the people that hate, well, for me, I'm not going to speak for people. For me who hates QILD, oftentimes people are like, yo, JEPI's better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll agree.
Yeah.
JEPI's better. But my major argument, not against JEPI, I've only done research on QILD.
Yeah.
So I don't really know that much about JEPI. But my position is if I'm going to benefit from covered calls and premiums, mm-hmm. I'm just gonna do that shit myself.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, so that's,
see, I like, so to push back on that, I still do that.
Mm-hmm.
But my dividend portfolio is not a portfolio that I'm actively trading options on, like we said.
Right.
Something I'm set and forget it. And I'll be honest with you, it's one of my holdings that I have that is a very high yield that I love the cash flow from.
And that's,
dude, I could throw like, let's say, I mean, who has an extra, you know, 100,000 laying around, but if I had an extra 100,000 laying around to throw into JEPI, that pushes off, dude, like I'd have to go back and do the math, but it doesn't, it's, I mean, you know, hundreds of dollars a month in
right.
passive income.
Until it goes to zero.
I don't think it will go to zero.
Right. And that's what you have to believe if you invest in that stuff. Right.
Exactly.
And that's SCHD has a large holding in Pepsi. That's why that's why I eliminated Pepsi from my dividend portfolio. Because another reason why I went with SCHD when I sold 3M was their top 10 holdings, I really didn't have any of them in my portfolio.
So, yarn over here. So, as someone who owns SCHD as well as Pepsi in my portfolio,
yeah.
Did you want to get rid of Pepsi just because you didn't want that much more of an ownership?
Yeah, I didn't want the exposure.
Got it.
I didn't want to become like, I didn't want to have too much exposure into Pepsi.
I have quite a bit invested in Pepsi.
Yeah.
Because I still own them in my Fidelity portfolio.
And I did a video about this years ago too, about like when I looked at.
Do you know how many shares I have in my Fidelity portfolio of Pepsi?
No.
Take a guess.
55.
It's like 78.
78.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I did, I was like, I'm such a huge VTI guy, right? And then I was doing individual growth stocks. And people are like, you do understand though, I'm not hating on you, Brad, but you do understand that when you own VTI and you own VIG and you own MGK, you own a shit ton of Apple, dude. Like, yeah, there's no reason that you need to be buying Apple. And I'm like, I'll look into that. And it turned out that my exposure to Apple was like 50% of my portfolio.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I sold it as an individual stock and I also reevaluated the ETFs. So if you're going to be an ETF guy, because we're ETF guys, or you're going to be an ETF girl, you can be an ETF furry, whatever you want to be, you have to make sure that you understand what those top 10 holdings are and how that's affecting your overall portfolio compared to if you're buying individual stocks. Mm-hmm. So one of your 20 is Pepsi then?
Yeah.
Crap. So I don't have that. Okay. So currently I have two of your four.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else you got?
So I'll go in order of target allocations.
The rest of all of my dividend stocks outside of SCHD are all 4%.
Okay, all of mine are arranged differently across the board.
Okay, yeah. So all of mine are exact. So I have, 20. I have 4% for my stocks, and then SCHD is 8.
So my highest target allocation single stock-wise, this one is because it's my worst performer, I'm down the most on, and I'm wanting to average down, is Smith & Wesson.
I own that.
Okay.
I have that at 4%. I'm currently down all-time 27.5%.
I am down.
And I do wheel that as well, separately in my dividend portfolio.
I'm down 32% total.
But they've gone down so much that wheel premiums are getting tough. Like I wrote in the money call the other day, and somebody in my Discord is like, what the hell did you do that for? And first off, for me, covered calls, I only care about my cost basis. So my cost basis is still lower than what it's at right now, but the premiums are terrible. So I was able to write.
Wait, your cost basis is lower? I thought you said you were down 27%.
This is in the dividend portfolio, but not in the wheel portfolio.
I got
a sign on a cash secure put. Okay. So I'm on the wheel portfolio, but those aren't really good. All right, so I'm 3 for 5.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Next one is Microsoft.
I do not have that, and we've had that debate.
Yeah.
Okay.
5% on Microsoft.
All right.
Another one I'm trying to average down. Microsoft's my second worst performer.
So 3 for 6.
Next one is, I forgot another ETF I own.
Okay.
It's at 5% SMH.
I don't know that.
Semiconductor. VanEck Vectors Semiconductor.
That's ETF. Like you're a little bit of a spec play, yeah?
No, I wouldn't say it's spec play at all. Because you got to know what those companies make up this ETF. Intel, NVIDIA, Broadcom, AMD... I mean, all your major Taiwan Semiconductor, all your major semiconductor companies. When I was going to do this, I was going to buy either Broadcom or NVIDIA in this portfolio.
Right.
But then I was also like, then Intel, man, it's such a value right now. I said, how do I pick one?
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck it. I don't have to.
There's some people that think that Intel's done.
Yeah. I mean, some people do.
They could go either way.
I mean, I can't tell the future.
I feel like they're kind of like Meta, where they're going to go down to $2 or they're going to explode back up.
Yeah, I don't think they're going away, but could be wrong. I've been proven wrong before.
And Intel's been one of those companies that should have gone away a bunch of times in their history.
Yeah.
And they always just fight back.
Yeah.
Fucking Intel. So I don't have that.
I don't have SMH.
3 out of 7?
Yep.
I'm falling.
Next one is my third worst performer, Dick's Sporting Goods.
I don't have that either.
Yeah.
Okay, 3 for 8.
Do you own REITs?
No. Yes.
Okay, you got this REIT then.
Okay, go ahead.
Realty Income.
I have that one. So that's 4 that I have.
How many REITs do you own? Because if you have two, if you have more than one REIT, then you own this one too.
I think I have 2.
Stag.
Stag, I have that too.
Yeah.
So that's 5 I got.
Okay.
Yes, let's go.
We've already talked about Pepsi.
Don't have that.
T. Row.
Don't have that.
Okay. That one, dude, T. Row, man. So T. Rowe was like my fourth worst performer.
Right.
And then this past week when the market decided to explode on it, you know, go up and it, T. Rowe shot up like 22%+ this past week.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Pretty crazy. Next one. I bet you probably have this one. Target.
I have Target.
Yeah. That's a very popular one.
6.
Apple.
I don't have Apple.
Okay. You probably have this one. Costco.
I don't have Costco.
Oh, really? Why don't have Costco?
And I, and you know, I'm a Joseph Carlson fan.
Okay.
I just,
is it a valuation thing?
Yeah.
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 So you know what got me past that?
What?
I feel like Costco is such a good company that I looked past that. I said, I'll pay a little bit more premium for it, and I'm just going to dollar cost into something like Costco, so I don't care what happens. If I pay a little more now, I'm going to keep buying it later. I don't care.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at, and I'm up. I'm up like probably 8%. I can check
right I'm now. So torn on that one. That is one of the ones that I might.
It's such a great company, man.
I know.
I'm up 6% total in Costco.
I know. What's their dividend yield?
It's low.
Like under 2?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that might be another reason, because yeah. You know me, I'm like the argument with like Microsoft and Apple, I say they're not dividend stocks, but
they are.
Dividend growth.
See, like this should be shown here. Let's go to the dividend tracker and take a look.
Oh, you're saying they don't show the dividend yield?
I couldn't find it on M1. See if you can find it. I got it right here in my portfolio. Costco is a 0.7.
Oh yeah, that's another reason why I'd wrap them in there. That's probably more than their valuation. Right there. So I think I have 6 or 7.
Yes, I think.
Okay, we can go back.
Next one, I don't think you probably own. Maybe John Deere Company, John Deere.
I used to own John Deere, but I didn't.
Such a great one.
I went with
Caterpillar. It's one of my favorites in the portfolio.
I went with Caterpillar instead.
I like them too. I would own Caterpillar as well.
Okay, yeah, I chose one or the other, and I liked
Caterpillar. Which I may throw that in there. Same thing with like Coke and Pepsi. Like I would definitely own, feel fine owning both.
I'm up 17% in Caterpillar.
Solid.
Yeah.
That's solid.
I'll take that.
Next one you probably don't have. It's a utility company, American Water Works.
No, you know my utilities.
Duke.
Duke's one of them, and Southern Company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next one I know you got. Every dividend investor owns it. Can you guess it?
Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
I own Johnson & Johnson.
Lockheed Martin's next.
I own them.
They've been solid, dude.
Yeah, I love them.
Best performer. Second to last one, every dividend investor owns.
I don't think I have any more of those.
Can you guess?
I would guess Pepsi.
Starbucks.
I own it.
Yeah. I feel like every dividend investor owns Starbucks.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Last one, Hershey's Company.
I don't own them.
Solid play.
All right, so how many was that? SCHD, VTI.
Smith & Wesson.
Hold on, I'm going down my list. Starbucks, Lockheed Martin, Target, Smith & Wesson.
You already said Smith & Wesson. Start over.
Okay. SCHD.
One.
VTI.
Two.
Starbucks.
Three.
Lockheed Martin.
Four.
Target.
Five.
Smith & Wesson.
Six.
Stag.
Seven.
Intel.
No.
Oh, you didn't own Intel, right? Johnson & Johnson?
8.
Realty Income?
9.
9.
9.
Oh, I said, was almost right. I said line. Over, though, because yeah, I thought yeah. It was 10. All right, so here's the ones we don't have in common.
Okay.
I have Caterpillar. We talked about that. I own Aflac.
Solid company.
Up 25%.
Yeah, that's good.
JP Morgan Chase. Another I needed a bank stock. I needed a bank stock.
Yeah.
Lowe's.
Lowe's and that was the other pair. When Lowe's I said Home Pepsi Depot. And Coca-Cola and all those, that was the other pair I was thinking of. I couldn't
Lowe's
think of.
Home Depot, yeah.
I would own both those, hands down.
Abby's up 44%
another
for me.
Solid one, yeah. That's a valuation one for me. I'm waiting for it to come down. I know it will.
Camping World. I'm a huge Marcus Alonis fan. Yeah. Huge Camping World guy. Snap-on Incorporated.
They got a high dividend too, don't
they? Yeah, they do. But that's what most their yield is high because their price is also taken a little bit of a what you could call a tumble.
Yeah.
But they were a COVID stock. So Snap-on. So Snap Tools.
Great one.
Intel.
Snap-on just had a huge dividend increase.
They did. They're what up, was it, like, and they're up 10% 12, or something? And they're up 12% for me on the year.
Nice.
Intel. The biggest real estate company in the world.
McDonald's. Yep.
Toyota.
Okay.
Procter & Gamble.
I want to add them. They're top on my watch list.
Yeah.
Valuation thing for me, though.
Kimberly-Clark.
Okay.
As long as I'm changing diapers, I'm going to own Kimberly-Clark. Yep. Verizon.
Okay.
Duke, we talked about. And Waste Management.
That's another good one.
So that rounds out mine. And to be honest, I don't know if I really want to get rid of any of them just yet.
I know there's for sure one I'm going to be selling.
That off yours?
Yeah.
Let me guess what it is. Dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not really a fundamental thing though. It's just
hard for me to get behind like what retails. Like we go into, and you talked about this too. Yeah. I think with when you go into a retail store these days, it is like, how the fuck are these guys making any money? And I'm sure the CEOs of these companies are like, we're making all of our money on online sales mm-hmm. now.
Well, I mean, I haven't looked at this in a while, to be honest. But back when I was doing, like, really looking at Dick's to add it, their retail sales were increasing.
Really?
This is post-COVID. I'd have to go back and relook at that. It's been a while, but...
And I mean, does that include, like, their Field and Stream? Because I feel like that's the new trend.
I don't know. I'd have to look.
These, like, outdoor retail stores.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why I added it as a retail play. I even said this in a video, was because... Out of all the retail type companies, like not talking grocery stores here, I would feel like outdoor type companies would do best, like Camping World.
Yeah,
you know, like that's somewhere where like if I know I'm going to go buy something, I usually still go to a store.
Yeah,
I
want to touch. There's certain things I want to touch them before I buy them.
Yeah, yeah. but I just it's one of those things, man. It's just like. You know, you look at your portfolio sometimes and you're like, I feel like my money could be better invested elsewhere.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, like, it's just one of those plays where, like, I'm holding it. I'm collecting the dividend. It's not really a big fundamentally down for us. I would just take the loss. I'm willing to hold it. If I go a little down farther, I'm fine with that. But whenever I get close to break even, I'll probably just...
Maybe sell. We can talk about that quick. Because this is something we do talk about a lot. How long do you hold on to a bag hold before you're like, cause like,
depends on the company, man.
In our average money fidelity portfolio.
Oh God.
That's the single worst. We took risks.
A big risk.
We YOLO'd some.
Most of it.
Okay. And we got throat.
Destroyed.
We got throat punch karate chopped.
Destroyed.
And once again, not a lot of money, but. Percentage wise,
down big time.
Bloodbath. And we've been currently having conversations with like, we're super stubborn and we're like, this shit will bounce back. We'll hold back. We'll hold on to it. It'll come back eventually, right? We don't need the money. And now we're starting to talk like, how long are we going to wait for this company to bounce back versus selling it off,
taking the
loss and investing it in something that will recuperate that loss quicker.
And a lot higher quality company.
Like, and we're almost there.
Yeah.
So like, where's your threshold of like bag? I mean, so obviously there's a lot of nuance factors that go into that.
I would say in that type of scenario.
I'll give you an example. And we can use this as an example. One stock that we talk about a lot. Our cost basis on Peloton is $42.
Yikes.
40, maybe yeah, 40.
Something like that.
It's a round number because we got assigned on a cash score put. Right now, it's been hovering between $9 and $12 for 5 or 6 months. And we've been selling calls on it for $5 to $10 a week.
Yeah.
And we're sitting here think so that's $4,000 we have invested in them, mm-hmm. which is now $1,000.
Yes.
So we're down $3,000 on the position.
Yeah.
Getting $10 a week. So that's $500 a year.
Yikes.
If it stays the same. So we'd have to wheel this thing for 6 more years to break even on the premiums or hope for a miracle. Now there's some stocks that the likelihood for that bounce back is a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
And Peloton's one of those ones where we're like, it might be best to
get out of it.
Take the $3,000. Put the $4,000 or take the $1,000 it's worth now.
Knowing if it does happen to go back up to 20, we're just going to be like, it's fine. It's whatever.
But it's like, even if it gets to, I guess the thing you have to ask yourself is, do we believe that Peloton can ever get back to our cost basis?
I don't think so.
I don't think Peloton will ever be a $40 stock ever again.
Me neither.
And I'm like, I've made videos. I've owned Peloton. I own the equipment. I think their company structure is bullshit. It's terrible. But I had a lower cost basis in my wheel portfolio and I was able to recuperate. And I also, I think I had the same thing as us. I think I had like a $35 put assigned. And then I started doing cash secure puts at like $8. Mm. And then I got the cost basis down, because I got assigned on those puts. I got the cost basis down to like $13, $14. Mm-hmm. So I was at one time wheeling 400 shares of it. Not because I want to own 400 shares of Peloton, because I thought it could go up, but the fact that I lowered my cost basis and I knew with a couple wheels I could at least break even.
Yeah.
So like, there's this stubborn part of me that like refuses to just take the L and just move on. But I think you're being the voice of reason inside this dividend portfolio this portfolio we have with Vanguard, with Fidelity. Like what's the other one? Baba? We had fucking.
That one's another one we got ripped to shreds on.
Tattoo Chef.
Yeah, we just
I don't even want to say that out loud.
Yeah. That's.
What up, Voozy?
Voozy. It was a bunch of high plays from.
Voozy's one of those ones, though. I think that Voozy one day can still.
Yeah, I'm fine. We got
$1,000 in that. Out of Alibaba, out of Voozy, Tattoo Chef, and Peloton, I actually have the most faith in Voozy.
Oh, really?
Even over Baba. I know you're a Baba guy.
Well, not even that. Like, now the China shit kind of worries me, but.
Yeah, I think.
I definitely would. If I was given $100,000 and I had to pick between those four stocks, I'd pick Baba all day. Even though with the China concern, that does freak me out, but I would take the risk.
I still think, yeah, because I think Voozy's the type of company where like...
See, I don't know enough about that company.
Yeah, they make VR glasses, but mostly for the industrial space. But like, they're constantly making... we'll just wrap this up if you got to pee, because I think we're almost done. We're 40 minutes in.
Oh, cool. I'm about to piss my pants.
Are you at like an 8 right now?
8.795.
All right, let me know if it gets to 10.
It's at 9 now.
It just went up a quarter of a percent.
Gotta go.
Because now you thought about it.
Yep.
Do you want to go pee and I'll just talk about Voozy quick?
Yeah, perfect.
Because I do want to ask you one more question before we get out of here.
Explain Voozy and then.
Yeah. So I guess the reason I feel this way about Voozy is they invent and design new products all the time. So they're not like a company that's has like an established product. Obviously they have revenues and things like that. But when we bought them, it was in their research and development. Like, we invested not in their current company, but the potential of their company. And to be honest, we lost on that because they fell flat on their face with the talks that they were talking about, like the products that they had in design with COVID and with the virtual space. It was asymmetric for us. We were like, we could put some money in and this thing's going to explode if it takes off, or we're going to get slapped. And we got slapped because they didn't follow through. But that doesn't mean they've stopped their research and development. And I think the VR space is still increasing with things like Meta and all that thing. And I'm not, they have a different concept, but I really think that they're really just one product away. They're one invention away from getting bought out by a bigger company or from exploring themselves, because they've been around for years. They've been around for a really long time. They're not a new company. They were just so small and they dealt with such a niche product that, you know, not many people knew about them unless you were dealing in that niche space that they particularly like traded in. So I think that the reason I have the most faith in them is because I think they're one invention away from exploding, or at least their revenue doubling, tripling. I think when their research and development finally catches up with their one product, but then again, they might be like the Thomas Edison, where they invent a million things and they're just hoping for one of them or two of them to be right. And their one or two of them just hasn't been right yet.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some cleanup work to do in that portfolio, that's for sure. But we also mentioned, if we just put all of our cash in like one solid, good quality company. Right. Well, I said the other day,
like if we just clean house, took the $5,000. I think we're down $5,000,
something like that.
Four or five grand.
If I was saying though, if we had the money to just go start writing cash grid puts on Google and it was at $83, I was like, dude, I'll do that in a heartbeat.
Right.
It'd be perfect.
I'm wheeling Google right now and I love it.
It's so nice.
I love it. My cost basis is high because I bought the 100 shares outright right after the split.
I remember you telling me that.
But I'm wheeling that for like 100 and change a week right now.
Damn, that's nice.
It is nice, but it's volatile. So like, that's not one of those wheel stocks where you know, you write the call on Monday and then it's like you have to monitor it every day.
Bro, I got a big gamble on a stock, a dividend stock. It's a big gamble though. Like probably more than I should have in there, but do you know what it is?
No.
ATVI.
You love them.
Well, I want this Microsoft deal to go through, but that's a complete gamble if it does or not. And if it goes through,
wasn't that news like fucking? I feel like a year ago, man.
It was a while. They said there's
it jumped like 20% that day.
Yeah, it was quite a bit, but then it came back down because regulations and, you know, monopolies and stuff like that. So the biggest headache right now for ATVI shareholders is the EU, European given pushback.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they even stated, like, the big thing hang up is Call of Duty. Like, it's the biggest game ever. And Sony's worried about them completely just wiping them out. And Microsoft's already stated, they're like, no, we're not going to not let Sony owners play Call of Duty. It's just, you'll have to play. But if you have Xbox and you own Game Pass, well, then you get Call of Duty for free.
Yeah, you have no idea what you're talking about.
No, you're not a gamer.
I know what Xbox is, but if you put an Xbox and a PlayStation next to one another, I couldn't pick them out.
Mm.
Like, I don't know what they look like.
I play PlayStation. I used to have an Xbox, but I don't know why we bought a PlayStation over Xbox, to be honest.
I just never had the attention span.
Oh, I love games, dude.
I want to wrap this dividend episode up with this one question, because this is a question I get a lot.
Okay.
Are you automating investments in, like, do you pay your dividend portfolio weekly, monthly, or like when you have extra cash?
Weekly. Every week I put $200 in.
And how did you come up with the $200 number?
Works for me, yeah. Money wise. It's comfortable. I could, if I want to raise it, I can. If I need to lower it, I'll lower it. But it, for our budget right now, it's what works for us.
I feel like regardless of whether you have 10, 20 stocks, whatever, just like exercise, like that weekly consistency.
Oh, it's amazing.
And that's another thing I love about, like, I know when it's Monday because it's Monday, but like over the summer when I wasn't working every day, I knew it was Monday because I got my alert from M1 Finance. Same. Like, your transaction has been completed.
Yep.
Because I just automatically had money going in every week.
Well, dude, so I started this portfolio last September.
Okay.
Was when I started on, I changed to Dividend Freedom and I said, I'm going to start documenting my new dividend portfolio. It was September, was a year. So a little over a year, I've been doing this portfolio, religiously putting money in every single week. I haven't missed a week. I think I've lowered all the way down to like $50 a week at one point.
Okay.
I think that was when the sewer thing was going on.
You have a fickle income, it happens.
Yeah, I do. So, but luckily lately I've been able to keep it at 200. It's cool to see where it was at $100 just a year ago with, you know, cents on for dividend income.
Right.
Now I'm at almost $15,000, hitting one of those $5,000 increments I like to celebrate, getting ready to get to that. And now it's at an extra $500 a year I earn.
Right.
A couple $100 every week.
Boom.
And if you can do it 50, do it 50. If you can do it 20, do it 20. Like,
I do $100 a week.
Yeah. It's perfect.
That's what I can handle. I do $100 a week into that. I do $250 a week into the Roth because that's my wife and I, which actually needs to go up because the Roth went up. That's another episode.
What's
that? The Roth limits went up.
To what?
65.
No shit. I didn't know that.
And retirement as well.
Oh, damn.
So we'll do an episode about that maybe one day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just what I do. And then I put everything else into VTI.
Yeah.
But I do it monthly. Like, I do all my, I'm one of those people where I like to have the month's bills money in the bank on the first of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't like to know on the first of the month, all my bills will be paid for. And then after that, then I can take money out in the second and I put all the rest into VTI.
I don't even think we do that. We just keep money in the checking. Like, we just make sure our checking always has over like $3,000 in it.
Yeah. See, by the end of, like, my checking account is the least amount, like right now in the middle of the month, because I've already paid my mortgage, things like that.
Mm.
But I will say this, and I can't believe I'm saying this. This episode comes out the week of Thanksgiving.
So, oh, wow, dude.
This will be out on Monday the 21st.
Jeez.
So, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Eat up, baby.
I can't believe it's like, before we know, we're talking about fucking Christmas episodes. Oh,
yeah. I already got my Christmas tree up, baby. This fucking guy. It's the most wonderful time. Dude,
it's fucking... It was borderline. If you were home, would it have been up in October, or do you wait till November 1st?
Mm-mm. No, you got to enjoy Halloween.
How do you put Halloween ahead of Thanksgiving?
Because Thanksgiving is kind of like a Christmas holiday to us. Like, Thanksgiving is, you know, depending how you guys celebrate it, it's like Halloween is scary. You still have fall decoration out. You're getting in costumes. It's a totally different type of holiday. Thanksgiving is you get together with family, you eat food, and you hang out. Sounds a lot like Christmas.
Except for it's Thanksgiving.
There's no changing of decorations. There's nothing like that. Like,
so we do like harvest, turkeys, fall leaves still.
Yeah. What do you mean harvest?
Like, it's like a harvest season, like the fall.
Yeah.
You bring in the harvest. Do you know what a harvest is?
Yeah. Yes, I know what harvest is.
So like, you harvest all of the food and you eat it.
Well, I thought you were talking about decoration.
Yeah, like harvest decorations.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, no, we just like to start Christmas because think about it, dude, like for us, we say Christmas is, dude, it's just such a magical time of the year. Why would I only want to experience that for 25 days when I could experience it for
the same reason? Like, I don't want to hear Christmas music yet on the radio.
Then don't listen to it.
I'll be fucking burnt out by Christmas.
Don't listen to it then.
You're not burnt out on Christmas by the time Christmas comes.
I don't listen to it every day, dude. If I'm in the mood, I want to turn on some Christmas music.
But like, even the Christmas tree, like.
No, not at all. But I will say this. The day after Christmas, it's up. We put it up. Like, or we take it down, I mean.
Day after Christmas.
Yeah.
So like, oh man, because I feel like if I walked by it every day for a month, after like a month, I'd be like, oh, look, there's the Christmas tree.
Oh, we love it.
Where like when we put it up.
It's such a soothing.
The week
like,
before, I'm like, it's fucking go time Christmas.
Oh, no, dude, that is, you don't get to, no way, man. That would suck. Only get a week of that?
I get less than a week. Mine's up for less than 7 days.
Oh my God, dude, no way. Like, I love like right now, like when Lindsay and I are laying on the couch, kids are in bed, you know, we got like a little.
Well, let me ask you this too then. I have Thanksgiving at my house with 70 people.
Yeah.
So like, Christmas trees take up a lot of space. Would you, if you were having like a huge
party? That wouldn't change at all. Because where our Christmas tree is doesn't really.
You know, we've been friends for a long time and we've been having this debate for like 5 years.
Yeah. And each one of us will never change each other's friends.
I'm such, your wife calls me a Grinch and I said, I am a Grinch. I will take that on.
And I'm just, we fucking love Christmas, dude.
Well, happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. And we'll catch you guys. I think we're still going to record maybe one, maybe two more. It's hard to sit here and like drink for a couple hours on the couch with our feet up while my wife's taking care of all the kids and just talk about money. It's hard. So we'll definitely get one more in.
Yeah.
Just know that every subsequent week after this, we've been drinking for longer and longer and longer.
That's a good point, man. Yeah. Because next week's episode comes out, if it's a little sloppy, it's a little sloppy.
It might be 1 week later for you, but it's 10 beers later for us. Actually, JJ's drinking vodka today.
Yeah.
No beers.
Oh, yeah.
He's watching his figure. All right, guys. We'll catch you on the next week for you guys, but the next hour for us. Peace.